I apologize that last week I was not here. I was in quarantine. I had COVID. But now, Baruch Rofei Cholim, and I'm appreciative to be able to be back and to learn Torah with everyone again. But the downside of that was not only that we weren't able to learn, but also that we had a separation between part one and part two. In the interim, so many people have spoken, and so many terrible and wonderful and everything confusing things have been said. So I would like to continue on the theme a little bit, but not really to relate to the issue at hand itself. So what we're going to talk about tonight obviously is very much related, and it's something that unfortunately comes up every so often. And I just think it's worth us having an understanding of, and that is what is supposed to happen when it becomes clear that a rabbi, a Talmud Chacham, somebody who we had a lot of respect for, does something inappropriate, does something wrong. What should our response be? How are we supposed to handle that as a community, as individuals? Can we continue to learn Torah from that person? Do we assume that everything that they know or teach is invalid? And I think that is a very important question. Unfortunately, it comes up more often than we wanted to. But the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch have a lot to say about this topic and this issue, and that's really what I'd like to delve into this evening. Dr. Solomon pointed out to me something that somehow people walked away from my last year with some kind of confusion. I didn't think that I could be any more clear than I was, but if there's even one person who's confused, I told him that I would make a clarification, and that is that should there be a person who is a danger to society or a potential danger to society, we need to go to the authorities. I thought that that was abundantly clear. I didn't think that that was something that was left for anyone's imagination. So I thank Dr. Solomon for bringing it to my attention, and I feel badly that anybody walked away with the wrong impression, but I really didn't think that that was at all the way the structure of the shiur was headed. Maybe somebody listened to part of it and just felt one comment was something that was off, but I just wanted to make that clarification. So first of all, why is it that when a leader, when a rabbi, when a Talmud Chacham does something wrong, why is it that we take it so personally? Why do people get so crazy about it? And I think that's just an important question for us to think about. So I really believe that it stems from a Gemara Maseches Shabbos, where the Gemara tells us that, as we know, when somebody passes away, so the immediate relatives have an obligation to observe Avelos. So they observe the Shiva, they observe the Shloshim, children observe Yud Beis Chodesh. So the Gemara says that Chacham Shemeis, when you have a rabbi, when you have a Talmud Chacham, the assumption, I'm using an interchangeable language, the assumption is that a rabbi is a Talmud Chacham. Not always the case, unfortunately, but it's supposed to be that way. So the Gemara says that a Chacham Shemeis, if you have a Talmud Chacham who passes away, Hakol Krovav. Everyone is a relative. And the Gemara asks, Hakol Krovav? What does that mean? I'm not related to the rabbi. His family is related to him. So what does it mean, Hakol Krovav? Ask the Gemara, Hakol Krovav Salka Dayetach? Do you mean to tell me that everyone is related to the rabbi? It's just simply not true. Ella says the Gemara, what it means is, Hakol Kikrovav. Everyone should be considered as if they are a relative to the rabbi. Why? So we'll see in a second why. But the Gemara says that what this indicates is that should the rabbi pass away, everybody has to treat themselves like an immediate relative, and they all have an obligation to rip kriya, they all have an obligation to observe certain aspects of Avelos. I have a vivid memory that although I was a young child and have very few memories from when I was a child, I'm forgetting lots of things as I'm getting a little bit older, but I don't know, you just don't have room for everything anymore, I'm finding. So I do remember that when Rav Soloveitchik passed away, and it was on Chol HaMoed Pesach, I do remember that my father traveled to Boston for the Levaya, and I also remember that he ripped Kriya, and not only did he rip Kriya, he made my brother rip Kriya as well, who was over Bar Mitzvah, because he said, all the Torah that we have in our life and the foundation of our home is all from Rav Soloveitchik, and if he passed away, that's what the Gemara says here, that we have to observe Avelos. In fact, I believe that that is when my father didn't shave, because he was noig avelos for the Rav, and he considered himself like a very close Talmud, and he felt that this was applicable to him, so he didn't shave, and that's when he just kept it, because I think my mother said that she liked it. So that's the way his beard evolved to what it is today. But that is really something that stems from this Gemara. So the Rishonim there ask, why is that the case? Why should we assume that everybody has to take upon themselves avelos when the rabbi passes away? What's the reason for that? And the Rishonim explain there, the Ritva writes, because the relationship that the rabbi is supposed to have with the community b'chayav while he's alive is one that everybody feels like they're related to him. That's really what the relationship of the rabbi is supposed to be. And therefore, when the rabbi passes away, everyone should have that feeling. And if you don't have that feeling, it's not a chisaron in you, it's a chisaron in the relationship that was developed with the rabbi himself and the way that he portrayed himself, the way he gave himself over, or maybe did not, to the community. There's a famous discussion amongst many of the three of the Gedolim in Europe before the Holocaust who were describing what is the job of a rabbi, what is really supposed to be the focus of the rabbi. So the Aruch HaShulchan was also a communal rabbi, and he said, the answer is you need to paskin shilas. And that's what he did. He wrote the Aruch HaShulchan. And he said, that's the job of a rabbi. He has to be available to answer the shilas. Another one of the Gedolim, I think it was Reb Itzela Panavizhar, I think, was the one who answered that the rabbi's job is to give shiurim and to give pilpul and to get people's minds thinking and racing and to be toiling in Torah and to be challenging themselves. And that's what it's about. And they asked Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, what's the job of the rabbi? And Reb Chaim said, the job of the rabbi is to be the father of all the yesomim in the town, to take care of all of the almanos, to be there for everybody who needs. That's the job of the rabbi. You get to learn on the side also, it's very nice. But the job of the rabbi is primarily to be the person who is there, to be the father of the yesomim, to be the shoulder to cry on for the people who need. And that is really the job. So Rav Asher Weiss has told me this many, many times. This story is a very famous story. And he said, who are we to be machriya between the Aruch HaShulchan and Reb Itzela Panavizhar and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik? The answer is we have to be machmer for all three. So the job of the rabbi is he needs to teach Torah. The job of the rabbi is he needs to paskin shailas. And the job of the rabbi is also that he needs to be the person who people can turn to when there is something wrong. And that is why the Gemara says that Talmud Chacham Shemes HaKol Krova, because that's the feeling that we're supposed to have. And I believe that's why when a Talmud Chacham does something that is beneath the image of what we believe, what we perceive them to be, it's so painful for us, because we feel not only a respect that we should feel, but we feel a certain sense of kinship. We feel a certain sense of relationship, of closeness to that person. And it's very devastating. And because of that, the Rambam says, quoting in Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, that the board of a shul, the board of a community, as it's referred to as the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, the people who are entrusted by the community to make communal decisions, have a tremendous responsibility when hiring a rabbi. So the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin, that if you are Mamid Dayin She'eno Hagun, I'm sure many of us have seen that in certain communities, when they have a search committee that's looking for a rabbi, it's not an honest and transparent process, and it's this one's uncle, and that one's cousin, and this one's brother-in-law, and it's everyone sticking in people who really don't belong, and then a rabbi might be hired who really should not have had the job, and the Gemara has very harsh words for being mamid a dayan she'eno hagun, for taking a leader who's really not worthy or fit of the position at all. The Sefer Achinuch actually writes, Kishem shetzarach lios hadayin yodea dine ha-Torah. Obviously, the rabbi has to know the halachos, the rabbi has to be learned. But on top of that, the Sefer Achinuch writes, Kimokein tzarach lios bal midos va'adam kasher. One of the foundational principles of being a rabbi is not just that he has to have the ability to answer a shaila or to give a shir. The ability of the rabbi has to be that he is, number one, a bal midos, that he has a nice way that he interacts with other people, and that he is an adam kasher, that he is an upstanding individual who has a sense of moral clarity. Why, says the Sefer Achinuch, the reason why is because how can he ever think of getting up and educating others about any area of life that's important to them when they're going to turn around and say, hey, we see the way you lead your life and you're not an upstanding individual yourself? That's what the Sefer Achinuch writes, and it's actually a very good question. So the Beis Yosef and Choshen Mishpat quotes a fascinating shayla from the Rashba. The Rashba is one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, and he says as follows. The Rashba was asked, Sha'alta, Hodieni, please let us know. You know, the Gemara says very harsh things about a community that hires a rabbi who is unworthy of the position. So what should we do, they ask. I'm reading the words of the Rashba. What should we do? We live in a small town, and we don't have the internet, and we don't have a telephone, and we cannot call references, and we have no idea how to look into anybody, and there's no one passing through our village. It's not like we're going to be able to really educate ourselves who the rabbi should be. Ketzad nase, what should we do? Ba'ayaro she'ein sham mi she'yodea afilu os achas. What do we do in a town where not a single person knows afilu osachas? We're illiterate. We don't know how to read any svarim. So how are we supposed to take for ourselves a rabbi who is worthy if we don't even know what that means? We have no way of gauging, we have no way of understanding where the person's level is. So that's the question that they sent to the Rashba. A beautiful shaila. And the Rashba answers, and it happens to be that his answer is quoted in the Beis Yosef and Choshen Mishpat, where he says, Tzarech livdok achar anashim ksherim. You're right. Maybe you're not educated enough to gauge how much or how little of a Talmud Chacham this person is. But one thing you could know, and that is very critical. Tzarech livdok, these are the words of the Rashba. Tzarech livdok achar anashim ksherim. You have to look after somebody who is an upstanding person. Yirei Elokim, someone who has Yira Shamayim. Sone Betza, somebody who doesn't take bribes, who's not running after the wealthy people in the town. Va'anashim mevine mada, and people who understand, mada means people who understand the world. That's the rabbi that you need. So you won't be able to know whether he's the greatest Talmud Chacham. Okay, so you won't know that. But at least you'll know everything else that's important about him. And I find this to be such an instructive comment. It's just amazing how the Rashba writes this, where he boils down for us that this is the job, this is the function, this is what it's all about. So much so, one of the Gedolim in the 1500s, the Maharaj Dam, writes, he was in Salonika, one of the really, his Tshuva Svarim are very famous. So he also was discussing this issue, what happens when you have a rabbi who does something wrong and how do we deal with it. So in the end of the day, he writes the following, that Nimtzanu Lemeidim, after he goes through a whole lengthy tshuva describing what the reaction should be of a community to a certain rabbi who did something wrong, he says, Kol mi she'en bo yira shamayim, a rabbi who doesn't have yira shamayim, garua mi mi she'en yodea. He's much worse than somebody who simply doesn't know. So if you have two choices, choice A is to choose a rabbi who's the greatest Talmud Chacham, but has horrible midos. Choice B is to choose the rabbi who is a warm personality, who understands people, who has Yirah Shamayim, and who may not be as learned as the other. The choice that one should make, says the Maharaj Dam, exactly what the Rashba says, is that you should choose to select the one who has the proper hashkafa, who has proper midos, who knows how to treat other human beings, because that is the most important. We know that in the Torah there really is no difference between different individuals. So what I mean by that is as follows. The Torah doesn't say, if you're this kind of Jew, this is how you should observe Yiddishkeit. And if you're that kind of Jew, this is how you should observe. Everybody is given 613 mitzvahs. If you happen to be a Kohen or a Levi, you have some that apply to you or don't apply to you. But everybody else is just considered to be in the same melting pot. Everybody has the same mitzvahs. Everyone is accountable for the same averos. And we don't assume that Schar Va'onesh is going to be different. We know that the Beis Din will punish somebody on the same criteria. It doesn't make a difference how great or how not great you might be. All of that is considered to be the same. The Gemara does say, though, that there's an expectation of a Talmud Chacham that he lives to a higher standard. So the Gemara tells us, for example, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we don't paskin this way, but just to give you an example, the Gemara says that even though it's true that the only way a Beis Din can give punishment to a person is if he has hasra, if somebody comes and warns him and tells him what the consequence is going to be of their actions and how the Beis Din is going to punish them, that's the only way to administer punishment in the end. By a Talmud Chacham, the Gemara has an opinion that even without Hasra we can punish them. What do you mean, but I wasn't warned? The answer is, you know, you don't have to be warned. You know the Psukim in Chumash, you know the Gemara, and you should have known better. If you've done this wrong, it means that you deserve to be punished. Most other people have the assumption that if they weren't warned explicitly, it means they simply did not know. So that's a very fascinating distinction that the Gemara draws. The Gemara has in many different places as well, Adam Chashev Shani, that although it's true that there are certain things that we're allowed to do, the Gemara tells us that if you are an Adam Chashev, if you are somebody who is looked at with distinction by the community, you have to behave differently. So one example the Gemara gives is, even though it's true that there are certain kulas with regard to Bishul Akum, if you're an Adam Chashev, you shouldn't rely on those kulas. Why? Because people are going to see, people are watching you, and you have to be very, very careful because people are going to learn the wrong thing from their misinterpretation of what it is that you do. And that is why the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, the Rambam says, many of us are familiar with the concept of Chilul Hashem. So the Rambam says, what exactly is a Chilul Hashem? The Rambam does not say that when you're in elementary school and you go on a bus and you're going to an amusement park, everyone has to behave because of Chilul Hashem. That's not what he says. That's what we tell our children. It's very nice. But it's a lot deeper than that. And the Rambam says, Chilul Hashem really manifests itself in three different ways. So the Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah says, number one, Achilul Hashem is a person who is supposed to give up his life for one of the three cardinal sins and chooses not to give up his life. That is Achilul Hashem. Okay, Achilul Hashem number two, he says, is if a person who doesn't have any real taiva, who doesn't really have any good reason why they're violating an avera, but says, I hate God, and that's why I'm doing this avera. That's a mumer lahachas. That's a person who's doing it just to spite the Ribono Shel Olam. That is a Chilul Hashem. All of us make mistakes. Everybody has a taiva. So that's not a Chilul Hashem. You make a mistake, that's the way it is. But if you deliberately go and violate an avera, that is considered a Chilul Hashem. Number three, says the Rambam, a Chilul Hashem would be if you have a person who is an Adam Gadol Batorah Umefursam Bechasidus. You have somebody who is looked upon by the community as a figure who is a leader, as a person who they assumed was a Talmud Chacham, was Mufursam Bechasidus, and you have people who walk away saying rumors about them because of the way they see this individual behaving. And says the Rambam, that doesn't only mean that the person actually did something wrong. But if you're doing something that's right, but people have the ability to misinterpret it, not because they're evil, but because they watch what you do, and it just doesn't look right. The Rambam gives an example. He says, imagine a person goes into a store, takes an item off the shelf, and walks out of the store. What are people going to say? Oh, he thinks nobody's watching, he's a ganav, he's stealing. Now the truth is, they don't know that the owner of the store told me, anytime you need anything, come right in, take whatever you need, and it's on me, it's okay, I love you so much, it's fine. Says the Rambam, you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because other people are watching, and they're going to say, hey, the rabbi thinks he can get away with it, I'm also going to try to get away with it. Or what kind of rabbi is that? We should respect him when this is the way he behaves, this is the way he interacts, this is the way he shops. That's really an unacceptable kind of behavior. And that is what the Rambam says would be something that is considered an awful Chilul Hashem. A Chilul Hashem is something that we need to be very careful about. I actually was talking to Yaakov the other day, actually, about this. And I mentioned that I remember a number of years ago, there was somebody who attacked, my father is always attacked in the newspapers, it's something I grew up with. If you don't know him, you would think he's a monster. But when you get to know him, he's the biggest teddy bear. But if you only know him from the newspapers, you think he's just this terrible, evil person. So often that's the case with newspapers and how they portray people. So I remember there was somebody who was a very well-known personality who wrote an all-out scathing attack against my father. The whole thing was a lie from beginning to end, whatever it was. And the very next day, he sent an email to my parents' private email address asking them that they should forgive him. He made a mistake. He shouldn't have done that. And I was livid. I couldn't believe it. And my feeling was, if you want a mechila for what you did, go to the same newspaper where you printed the front page article, op-ed, yesterday, and submit your new article and ask them to publish a humiliating article about yourself saying how you were so quick to judge and you didn't do your due diligence before writing your article, and maybe then we could discuss whether or not we could be mochel you. But until that happens, there's nothing to even talk about. Anyway, I was going to respond to him. My father didn't let me respond. He said, don't worry, it's fine. It's for a discussion for another time. Why he didn't let me respond, I told Yaakov the whole story. It's a good story. But anyway, the Rambam writes in a tshuva, very interestingly, that if a person makes a Chilul Hashem birabim, you go to a newspaper and you make a public Chilul Hashem because you wrote something without doing your due diligence, because you posted a comment on something without knowing what you were talking about, because you forwarded a message to your whole WhatsApp chat group without really knowing what you were doing and without paying attention. You make a Chilul Hashem birabim. The Rambam says, the only way to have a tshuva gemura for that is if you go in public and you show the whole public that got the first message of the Chilul Hashem that you have now become a Baal Tshuva Gemura. I would say that that is almost impossible. But that's what the Rambam says. Maybe in his days it was possible because the Rabbim that he was describing was your shul, your community, the couple of friends that you had. Now, the Rabbim that we're describing, imagine you write something online, it's there, and in seconds it goes around the world. And there's no way to pull it back. And people are not mindful enough of that. But that's what the Rambam says. A Chilul Hashem is something that is sometimes manifesting itself in very public ways. And the only way to pull back and to do tshuva for such a thing is to show the entire public that saw the Chilul Hashem that you are a Baal Tshuva Gemura. So one should have to be very, very careful about that. So the Gemara then has a very fascinating discussion. The Gemara Moed Katan writes that Rabbi Yehuda was very unsure what to do. There was a Talmud Chacham in the days of Rabbi Yehuda who clearly was not acting the way a Talmud Chacham should behave. And Rabbi Yehuda said he was very conflicted. On the one hand, I should expose him, because why should we have a member of the community? We're not talking about somebody who was abusive, somebody he was doing something that was inappropriate for somebody of his stature. So the Gemara says Rabbi Yehuda was very unsure what to do. On the one hand, it's a chilul Hashem for me to publicize that a Talmud Chacham did something wrong. It's worse. People are going to say, this is God, this is his Torah. So that's number one. On the other hand, how could I not expose him? Then people are going to continue to consult with this person. People are going to continue to look up to this person. What good is that going to do? And the Gemara goes through a whole complicated discussion as to what Rabbi Yehuda should have done, till the Gemara comes to the conclusion that he got a letter from one of the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, from Rabbi Yochanan, who sent him a letter, and he told him, "Im harav doma lemalach Hashem tzevakos, yivakish Torah mipihu." You can only follow a rabbi who is doma lemalach Hashem tzevakos, who has stellar character traits. And if he doesn't, al yivakish Torah mipihu, you have to get yourself away from his leadership, because nothing good will come from that. And that was the conclusion of the Gemara, to which the Gemara then has a follow-up discussion. Well, what is our obligation? Are we supposed to expose such people? Should we then go ahead and tell the whole community about what's going on? Should everybody know about such a story? And the Gemara there goes into a very lengthy and detailed discussion about what exactly one should do. And the Rishonim come to the conclusion that when a Talmud Chacham violates an Avera, we paskin like Rish Lakish, that ein lefarsem chatav, you are not supposed to go ahead and publicize it. Again, let me clarify, we're not talking about where he did an Avera that is a menace to society. We're not talking about where he's a danger to other people. We're talking about where he made a very bad mistake, and he made a wrong ethical decision. So do you go out in the public sphere and tell everybody about the mistake, or do you just let it be? Says the Gemara, you let it be. Now, why do you let it be? Is this a cover-up? The Gemara believes we should be involved in cover-up scandals. Somebody does something wrong, he shouldn't be held accountable. So the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, again, it's not connected, but if you put the Gemaras together, they are. So the Gemara there says in Maseches Brachos that the reason why is because we have an assumption that if a person is sincere, if a Talmud Chacham is real and he has Yiras Shamayim, then when he violates an Avera, he's going to get the better of himself. He's going to realize that he has to put his life back in order. Somebody should go talk to him privately, and he'll do tshuva. And that's something that we have to believe is going to be the path and the choice that he is going to choose for himself, and therefore we do not have to worry. But the Gemara is not saying that we should have a cover-up scandal and we should never even notice it. The Gemara just says, deal with it privately, and you have to call him in. The Gemara says, what if we call him in, and the whoever it is that's designated to have the difficult conversation with him has the discussion, and then a few months go by and it happens again? So then the Gemara says, now we have to take it more seriously. Now we have to figure out what to do. But it's going to be a different conversation when this kind of behavior repeats itself than it is the first time around. So there is a very important discussion in the poskim and the Gemara as well. What should our perspective be with a rabbi who does something wrong? So the Gemara gives an example of this kind of story. So the Gemara says there was someone in the days of David HaMelech whose name was Doeg HaAdomi. Now Doeg HaAdomi was actually an amazing Jew. He was an amazing person. Now, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that in the end, Ein lo chelek l'olam haba. He ended up being a terrible person and he gets no olam haba. So what happened? So the Gemara actually tells us, the Midrashim tell us, and Rashi says that Doeg was a person. I'll read you a pasuk from Sefer Shmuel where it says that one day Doeg HaAdomi was Abir HaRoim and he was Ne'etzar Lefnei Hashem. He was stopped in front of Hashem. So what does it mean he was stopped in front of Hashem? So Rashi says what it means is his whole day was spent sitting and learning, and that was Doeg. Others write that he was the Av Beis Din. Rashi tells us that he was doing his spodidus. He was connecting with the Ribono Shel Olam. So he started off being an amazing person. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was doing the right thing. He was a leader. And then what happens? So the story goes that when Shaul HaMelech was trying to kill David, so Doeg got involved in that whole story, and Doeg is the one who carried out the murder of the entire Nov Ir HaKohanim. We don't have enough time to go into the whole story, but he murdered many, many people unjustly. There was no justification for him to do that. And as a result of that, the Gemara says that Doeg is considered a Rasha Marusha. He has Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba. And to the point that the Gemara says that Doeg, everything that he learned was obviously insincere. It was Misafa V'Lachutz. It was obviously not really who he was. And Doeg was somebody who, even after this tragedy happened and we finally came to an understanding of who he really was, so Doeg is somebody who should not have been listened to, should not have been learned from, and he was totally off the grid. So the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he's wondering, is that true? Every time a rabbi violates an Avera, so he falls off the grid? Is that really the way it goes? How can that be? Do you think a rabbi never talks Lashon Hara? You think a rabbi never makes a mistake? Do you think that a rabbi should be held on a pedestal and he doesn't have the same kind of Yetzer Hara as everybody else has? We're all human beings, so everybody has their challenges. Again, yours might not be his, and his might not be yours, but everybody's going to make a mistake at some point in life. So why is it that Doeg lost his job? Why is it that he lost his entire position if he made a mistake? So the Chasam Sofer writes, the truth is that you really need to break it down to two different categories of mistake. Chasam Sofer writes that a community wrote to him that the rabbi, they realized, wasn't putting on tefillin. You know, you go to some communities like ours, and you have a minyan every half an hour in the morning. And at night you have a minyan. So you ask the rabbi, "Nu, did you daven mincha?" Yeah, I daven at the earlier minyan. You ask him, "You daven marav?" Yeah, I'm going to daven later. You ask him in the morning, "You daven shachris?" Yeah, I was at the vasikin, I was at the hashkama, I was at this one, the other one. Meanwhile, you go around and you start asking people, and everyone's saying he wasn't at any minyan. So it's very easy to get away with that in a community like ours. But they actually nailed the rabbi in a certain community in Germany, and they sent the shaila to the Chasam Sofer, and they asked him, what do we do with the rabbi? It turns out he's not putting on tefillin every day. We asked everybody, and they see his tefillin hasn't moved. It's on the shelf, it hasn't moved in days, and it's clear to us that the rabbi has not been doing the mitzvah the way he's supposed to. And we also caught the rabbi, you know, we watched him the other day. He went to a meat restaurant. A few hours later, we saw him having a meeting with someone in a milk restaurant. He didn't wait the 6 hours. He's just a fraud, this guy. So they asked the Chasam Sofer, what do we do with him? So the Chasam Sofer says, look, if he made a mistake, beinola beinatzma, he got the worse of himself, and he made a wrong choice, and he ate in the 6 hours, or he wasn't davening shachris, and he wasn't putting on his tefillin, all of that, says the Chasam Sofer, that's between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, somebody should pull him aside and say, hey, we're on to you. We know what's going on, and you better put yourself together. Otherwise, we don't want you to be the rabbi. Who wants a rabbi who doesn't daven, who doesn't put on tefillin? Okay. But, says the Chasam Sofer, if we're talking about someone who is a michshol l'rabim, now the example that he gives is so much less than the way we would categorize a michshol l'rabim. So who would you say is somebody who is a public danger? I would say a rabbi who's an abuser, rachmana litzlan, is a public danger. Now the Chasam Sofer never dreamt that such a thing was going on, so he doesn't write that. So the Chasam Sofer writes, imagine that you have somebody who comes to him with a shaila and hilchos treifos, and the rabbi says it's kosher when he knows that it's treif. That's a michshol rabbim. Says the Chasam Sofer, if he's not only doing something that's impacting his relationship with God, but he's going ahead and he's being matir isurim for other people. Chasam Sofer says you have a woman who comes to him with a shaila and he says, yeah, you can go to the mikvah. What do you mean you can go to the mikvah? You know that this woman is not prepared to go to the mikvah, yet you know that she's not tahora, and you paskin the shaila inappropriately just because you wanted to be the nice guy? That's not the way it works. Says the Chasam Sofer, if we're dealing with somebody like that, where he's a michshol rabim, and 1,000 times kavachomer, if he's a physical danger to the rabim, not just a spiritual danger, but he's a physical danger to the rabim, says the Chasam Sofer, you can't just pull him aside and say, oh, you know, we're onto you, we know what's going on. You have to go ahead and remove him from the position. Writes the Chasam Sofer, not just remove him from the position, you have to defrock him. You have to make sure he never gets a position anywhere else. Until he goes for the proper, he doesn't say therapy, but he says until he goes through some very, very intensive program to really make sure that we can be confident that he doesn't have these issues anymore. But the Chasam Sofer draws that distinction. And he says that if you have somebody who's a michshol rabim, and that's the answer, Doeg HaAdomi just murdered an entire city that was innocent, that's not a person who we consider to be a sincere individual who happened to make a mistake. No, that's not his relationship between himself and God. That's something that impacts his relationship with other people. That's a dangerous person. And as a result of that, the Gemara says, "Ein lo chelek l'olam haba." But not only that, we strip him from all of his titles. We make sure that the community knows clearly what this person is all about. And we give them no opportunity to be in a leadership position any longer. Outside of that, we have another example. So the Chasam Sofer here writes that it's not only a person who does something that is a michshol rabim. The Rambam writes something fascinating. The Gemara talks about in a Mishnah Maseches Makos. So we know that if somebody is rachmana litzlan a rotzeach b'shogig, somebody is involved in a inadvertent killing, somebody loses their life as a result. So the Gemara tells us that they have to go to the Ari Mikla. Again, it wasn't an intentional murder, but it was a terrible tragedy. He has to stay in the Ari Miklat until the Kohen Gadol passes away. Now that could be a year, that could be 6 months, or it could be 50 years. We don't know when the Kohen Gadol is going to die, but that's his fate. That's what has to happen. He has to stay in the Ari Miklat until the Kohen Gadol passes away. So the Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanoim. What happens after the person gets out of the Ari Miklat? So now he's free. So do you say that, let's say the rabbi was involved in a car accident and somebody died as a result of it. Is it Rotzeach B'Shogeg? Wasn't his fault. It was a Shogeg. Now he has to go to Ari Miklat. So he can't be the rabbi anymore. Obviously, he's in Ari Miklat. Now he gets out. He's been there the last 25 years. Now he gets out. Would we be allowed to put this person back in their position that they once held? Fascinating shayla. So the Gemara has a Machlokes Tanaim. The Rambam writes that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that he's not allowed to take his rabbinic position again. Why? Why can't he go back to his position? So the Rambam says, because holu ba takala zu hagadola al yado. Says the Rambam, a murder happened on his hands. It's not like some kind of little thing happened. So you're right, it was only a rotzeach b'shogeg. He did not intend to do it. But imagine every time anyone talks about the rabbi, someone's going to ask you, where do you live? Oh, I live in this community. Oh, who's the rabbi? Oh, that's the one. Of course, we all remember the story. Yeah, but it wasn't his fault, but it was his fault. It's a chil Hashem, says the Rambam. You're right. Even in a case like this, he's not a danger to the public. That's not the reason why we take his position away, but hol uba takala gedola al yado. Such a terrible thing happened in his hands. Whether he's to blame or not, but everyone's going to think, everyone's going to associate him with that terrible story. And therefore, in a situation like that, he writes that that would be another reason why we would remove someone's position from them. And the Rishonim say that not only are we talking about a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, but the Ritva writes that if he's involved in Dvarim Chamurim Umeusim, he was involved in something, he got caught up, let's say, you know, he was taken advantage of and he got caught up in a whole financial scandal, he didn't really know someone convinced him. But in the end of the day, everyone's going to associate this person with that scandal, and that's a davar chamor umalus. It's something that everyone knows about. It's something that everyone's familiar with. That would be another grounds to remove a person from that kind of position. I see we're already over time. There's so much more to say about this topic. But something that I'm going to leave you off to think about is, when you have a situation like this, so what do you do with all the Torah that you studied from that individual? That is a very serious question. So the reason why it's a problem is because the Gemara tells us that Reb Meir was one of the Gedolei HaTanaim, had a Rebbe whose name was Elisha ben Avuya, and unfortunately later on in life, Elisha ben Avuya went totally off the derech, even though he was a great, great Tana, but he lost it all, he gave it all up, and the Gemara says that he was once riding, I think, a horse on Yom Kippur. He was clearly, blatantly violating the halacha, and Reb Meir was in the middle of talking and learning with him while he was riding a horse on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, Reb Meir, I mean, come on. You're asking a shaila to Elisha ben Avuya when he's on a horse on Yom Kippur? Are you out of your mind? How's he going to have the answer to your shaila? He's so off base. Everything about his life is wrong. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Normally, you're not supposed to learn from a rabbi who has disgraced himself, who's done the wrong thing, who's taken the wrong path, who's unethical. All of that is true. But if you're a mayor, and you're an Adam Gadol, and you know how to discern what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong from the Rebbe, so then you have a right to learn from such a Rebbe. So the question is, although that's what the Gemara says, the Rambam just quotes the halacha directly without giving that provision. He doesn't say, well, if you're an Adam Gadol and you're so great like Reb Meir, then you can learn from somebody who's treif, then you can learn from somebody who's off. The Rambam doesn't make that distinction. Why not? So many Achronim say, because no one's like Reb Meir. Reb Meir was one in a million years, and we cannot assume that we have the strength and the clarity of vision to understand what's right and what's wrong. If you have somebody who's off, then he's off. And that's what the Rambam paskins, that you cannot learn from such an individual. Again, it's a very, very rich topic, but sometimes, unfortunately, that comes up as well. Can we read the books of such an individual? Can we learn the svarim of such an individual? Now again, the case that we're dealing with here in this particular situation that came up recently is very, very different. Why? Because having the books around is an insult and an offense to the victims, and it's something, I mean, personally, even if there were no victims that would ever see it in my home, I mean, how can you ever know such a thing? But even if there was such a possibility, I'm nauseous to have these things in my house. I don't want my children being inspired by such a person. This is not the kind of values. My children actually heard about all of this in school, which I was horrified about. I mean, it was to be expected, but, you know, they came home and we had an open conversation, an open discussion about it in a healthy way. But again, once they know that, why would you want your children thinking about that when they pick up a book of such an individual who is so destructive and so vile and so off the grid in everything they did and so immoral and just such a dangerous person? So all of that aside, and some said, oh, you look in the stories and maybe he's manipulating kids. Even if he didn't, even if all the stories are kosher and beautiful, and which I have no idea, I've never read the books, but even leaving that aside, I'm just disgusted to have this in my house. I don't want it. And I'm leaving the factor of victims aside. I think that's a good enough reason on its own. But even if you would never ever encounter, you're moving to a desert island, it's still something that just feels wrong. It's not something that should be in your home. We live homes that are supposed to be ethical and upstanding and giving over values to our children that are proper and are ones that they can live by. And this is just so antithetical to everything we stand for. But outside of this discussion, I think it's a important conversation to have as well. What happens when you have a situation where somebody does something very wrong? What do we do with the Torah that they taught? What do we do with the songs that they composed? What do we do with all of these discussions? I think is something that we need to give some additional thought to. But again, as everything else, the halacha has so much to say about all of this and more. I just gave a very brief synopsis of some of the Maamar Makomos, but there's a lot more to talk about. Mitzvah Hashem, next week we will continue.